Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we're focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everybody, today my guests are Heath and Jamie Britt. Heath and Jamie are a dual military couple, both serving in the Navy, and they have a podcast called the E14 Podcast, where they discuss real-world topics ranging from marriage, mental health, self-care, and a whole lot of other topics. So welcome to the show, Heath and Jamie. Why don't you guys tell us a little bit about yourselves and your background? Jamie, if you want to go first, maybe?
Then
we'll hop over to Heath.
Thanks so much for having us, Scott. Thanks. We're so happy to be on your podcast. I'm Jamie Brand. I'm one half of the E14 podcast, and I've been in the Navy for 16 years and recently have converted from air traffic controller over to Navy career counselor. So I'm really excited about this new opportunity in finishing my time as a Navy career counselor or quote unquote recruiter. But yeah, I'm really happy to be here and just to chit chat with you. And Heath.
Hey, Scott. Hey, thanks, brother, for having us on, man. I'm Heath Britt. I'm originally from Central Louisiana. Been in the Navy about 25 years, electronic technician by trade. I'm stationed at Naval Special Warfare Command here in South Mississippi. Might be retiring soon, but you know, I love it. I wouldn't have been in 25 years, man. Love your show, man. Thanks for having us on, man.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'm glad you guys were able to make time to be on the show. Now, when I was on your show a few weeks ago, one of the questions that you guys asked of me was about the name of my podcast, the Drive On Podcast, which for new listeners and anyone who might not be familiar with the term, drive on, it's a phrase basically meaning to continue with your mission despite any setbacks or hardships that you might encounter along the way. And since we talk a lot about the issues that veterans face on this podcast, it seemed like a fitting term to have for this podcast. Now, I want to flip the question around to you guys and ask where the name E14 came for your podcast.
Well, brother, I love the name of your podcast, by the way. It speaks to me. Our podcast came because Jamie's an E6, I'm an E8. And we used to joke around when we got married, hey, we're like an E14. We get paid. You know, we're like an officer pay over here, right? So I did the simple math because I'm a simpleton. So I did 8 + 6 = 14, and that's how we got the E14.
All right. That makes sense. That's a fitting way to put those two together, and you know, combining your combined experiences here and everything. I think that's right. Great. Cool. And so I definitely want to, you know, get a chance to talk a little bit about your podcast and, you know, the type of stuff that you guys talk about on the podcast too. So you know, I briefly mentioned some of the topics, but what are some of the things that you guys talk about on your podcast?
So when we first started out, when we were just beginning, we thought, oh, we'll take a nautical term or a nautical idea and we'll just kind of put it into civilian terms or everyday life, you know. So we did a show about ballasting your ship, which means balancing your life with work and you know, family and all of that stuff. And then we quickly realized that we're going to run out of nautical terms if we keep doing this every single show. And so we decided to start doing different series. And so we'll do like a 4-part series mixed in with, you know, just different veterans that we connect with along the way, fun episodes where we talk about alcohol or whiskey or beer or whatever it may be that's interesting to that veteran. And then in mixed in with that, we do our series. So we've done a series on Hold Fast, which I did tell you that was our term for drive on, our nautical term or our Navy term for drive on, which just means hold on, you know, and give it everything you've got, hold fast through the storm. We've done another series, which was To Hell with the Stigma, and that focused primarily on mental health and mental health in the military and how you can deal with it and seek help while in. And then coming up. We haven't started on it yet, but our new series will be The Charge of Leadership. So a lot of leaders in the military have, I won't call them problems, but or burdens, but sometimes leadership is hard. So we want to tackle those topics that, you know, come along with leadership. So that's our new series that we'll be coming up with, mixed in, sprinkled in with some fun episodes, I think.
Yeah, Scott, like Jamie hit the nail on the head, brother. That "to hell with the stigma" really hit me hard, because like I've mentioned other times, I suffered from a stroke back in February, and it changed me a little bit. You know, I was a little more angrier, a little more or less tolerant. And I was that guy back in the day who was like, "Hey, I deal with that. Why can't you deal with that?" You know, I was that asshole. You know, I was that guy. And, but, you know, everybody has their own triggers. You know, no human is the same. No one human is the same. And it really opened my eyes. And then it just happened to be when we decided to do that, May was Military Mental Health Awareness Month. And there's a lot of bad SOBs that deal with, when I say bad, I mean tough SOBs that deal with a lot of mental issues, you know, for stuff they've seen in the day. And to me, dude, you're an American hero and you dealt with it. We all dealt with it, and we need to highlight that, because 46% of Americans deal with not even military.
46%.
46% of Americans deal with mental health issues, and it's important to highlight that.
It is, and a lot of people deal with it, and sometimes it just goes unchecked. People, you know, think, oh well, I'll just toughen up and I'll you know, be a man and deal with it, or, you know, whatever, I'll just suck it up. But, you know, that's not always the best way to do it. So I really did like your series on, you know, to hell with the stigma, and, you know, let's get it out there and let's start talking about it and make this a thing that people are aware of and will actually talk about. So I'm really glad that you guys did hit on that topic and covered that as, you know, as well as you did. So anyone who, you know, hasn't listened to that series yet, go check out their podcast, E14 podcast, and check out, you know, some of those episodes. I think you guys really did a great job on that too. So,
and for all your listeners, you were gracious enough to to come on our show. I think it was episode 2.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was episode
part,
2.
I think so. It was part 2. Yeah,
of that series, which really highlighted a lot of stuff that you went through. You know, dealing with your brother, and I couldn't imagine dealing with what you dealt with, brother. Mm-hmm. And you turned out pretty damn good.
Well, I put on a good front anyways.
Yeah. Exactly.
So Jamie, you had talked when we recorded the episode on your podcast last time, you had talked about the loss of your mother and while you were deployed. And first of all, I want to say, you know, sorry for your loss there, because that's a hard thing to do, to go through, no matter what the circumstances is, but then add that on top of, you know, being deployed, you know, thousands of miles away from home. And that just makes it 10 times worse. And, you know, so, you know, losing a loved one like that's never easy, but if you would, could you talk a little bit about that experience and how you were basically forced to compartmentalize grieving for your mom and dealing with getting back to your deployment all within a matter of, what was it, like a week or so?
Seven days. So my deployment was a year long to Djibouti, Africa. And when we began this deployment, Heath and I actually had just got married. So we were a new marriage, and with a new combined family of, you know, stepchildren and learning the ins and outs. And then I get the word, hey, you've got to go to Africa. And, what a dab in the side that was, because I was like, well, that's terrible timing, you know?
Right.
So it was actually because one of the air traffic controllers had committed suicide and they needed a hot fill. So I found out in August. They wanted me to leave in October, but I literally could not get all of the pre-deployment things, trainings and medical and all of that stuff done in that amount of time. So they had to extend me. And I actually started in November. I left in November of that year and, you know, said goodbye to my mom, dad, and my children and my husband, and went to Africa. Now, it's a whole lot of waiting for things to happen there, which later we discovered is actually a contributor to PTSD, just kind of waiting for the bomb to be at the front gate or waiting for, you know, the terrorist attack, but it never happens. About, was it 9 months into my deployment, my mom passed away. She had an aneurysm, was not in, it was unexpected. She wasn't sick. It wasn't anything. So I was shocked.
Right.
To say the least. And within a day or two, they had, I just stayed one night, and then the next day they had me on a plane headed back to America. And from Africa to America, it was about a 26-hour, commute or flight altogether. Mm-hmm. So I got home, of course, family grieving. I actually beat my sister home, who lived in San Diego. So, yeah,
oh, wow.
I was like, how did I beat you here? And I came halfway across the world. But, you know, it was heavy and it was tough. And we had to bury my mom. And then my command only gave me 7 days in country. And so it was kind of just like I would like to say it was a rest from the deployment, but it wasn't, because it was just, let's go to my hometown. Let's get my mom taken care of. And then, I mean, shortly after that, it was, all right, see you later. I got to go back. And I was back, boots on ground, day 8 or 9 or so, whatever the 26 hours, flight time.
Right. Right.
And so I think it was like a two day turnaround.
And it's not like you're back home kicking your feet up on the beach or, relaxing. So didn't get that decompression time. It was you were continuing to have a stressful experience.
I was angry that I was back in country. It's hot. It's like a million degrees there. It's on the equator. I mean, it's terrible. And I'm mad. I'm mad because I only got 7 days to be with my family, and then I had to come back. And then I still had 3 to 4 months left of this deployment to get through, which doesn't seem like a lot of time, but back in that position, it seemed like an eternity.
Right.
And every day, as you know, on deployment, every day is the same. You wake up, you go to work, you do your job or whatever, you eat, you work out, you go back. And so it was the monotony of the deployment, it just made it seem even longer. Right. But I didn't really deal with my mom's death, because when you're on deployment, you don't really see your family anyway. I mean, it's all phone calls. So you don't talk to them every single day. And, it just kind of was like, I guess, like you said, compartmentalized, put it in the box. I was like, all right. Well, I'll just get back to my job. I got a job to do. I got a big job to do, because I was the command fitness leader for the entire Camp Limigné and the Horn of Africa. So I was like, well, I got to get everybody weighed in. I've got to do all of this and get all of the airplanes together. I was the tower chief at the time, make sure that it was manned. And it just became like, I was just went back to work. And, it wasn't until after I came home, about what, 2 months, I would say, that's when I realized, hey, my mom's not here. And that was tough.
Yeah, I can only imagine how tough that would be, having to go back into that and then come back months later and finally being able to kind of decompress and grieve properly, because seven days was probably just not enough.
It's so hard to explain, because I knew she wasn't there. I knew mentally, I knew that she had passed, but I don't know. It's really hard to explain how that shift went, but it wasn't until I got back when I was like, okay, my mom's not here,
Yeah, that's tough. Now, being a dual military couple, that's not something that takes place all the time. You know, a lot of times there's obviously, you know, military couples where at least one of the two is in the military, but it doesn't always happen where there's two in the, right, the couple right. that is military. So what's that like being a dual military couple, Heath? Like, I know it's stressful enough to be away from home on deployment or training for weeks at a time, but when there's just one person in the relationship, but I can't imagine what it's like for a dual couple. Like, you know, when Jamie was deployed, that must have been hard for you, especially just being married, newlywed, and everything like that. How was it like being a dual military couple?
Well, Scott, luckily I knew her boys. You know, they're my stepkids, right? You know, I don't think of that as my stepkids, but in real life, they're my stepkids, and I knew them pretty well before she deployed because we dated for a good year mm-hmm. prior to her deployment, before we got married and she deployed. So they knew me. But it was tough, man, because you're dealing with, you know, with the natural fathers. Mm-hmm. You're dealing with all that. You're the guy. You're the dude. Because obviously Jamie couldn't do it when she's 4,000 miles away, 6,000 miles away or whatever. So you had to deal with all that, which is luckily it wasn't too bad. But you gotta be, because normally I was the guy that was like, hey, let's go do this. I'm the fun dude. Cause I'm the boyfriend, right? And now I had to be the, I, lack of a better term, the asshole.
I had to be the dad.
I had to be the dad. I had to be like, no, you're gonna sit there and do your damn homework. You're gonna sit there. You're gonna do your chores. You're gonna do this. You're gonna do that. So it was a quick dynamic, and it was the right thing to do. But you know, you're like, you don't want to be that guy,
right?
You don't want to be that guy. Obviously, you won't, as a person, as a human being, you want to be liked.
Sure.
But exactly. I had to be that guy where I wasn't liked all the time, which I'm okay with that because it's the right thing to do for the end game, for the better yep. ending. And so, but you know, I mean, as at the time I had almost 20 years in the Navy. So I knew that it wasn't always rainbows and Yahtzee. Sometimes it had to be, you know, it had to be tough. Mm-hmm. And sure. I had no problem doing that. But
that was his first experience of getting left behind, because as you know, there's the deployee and the deployer,
yeah,
or whatever. Right. I don't know if that's the right term, but there's the one that goes and there's the ones that gets left behind. And so he got the other side of the equation, and that was tough.
Dude, I'm going to tell you, we went to a deployment readiness training in the Bronx in New York City.
Okay.
And at the end of it, the guy said, all the spouses stand up. So I'm sitting here, a 19-year E8, right? Been around the block a few times.
Sure.
And you got all these fresh husbands stand up. Didn't know shit from Shinola.
Mostly wives.
But a lot of wives. Mm-hmm. And they stand up and they clap for us. You're part of the team too. Like, dude, I've been on like 10 deployments, but it was eye opening for me because it was the first time I was on that side of the rug, you know what I mean? On that side of the fence.
Right.
And it was eye opening. Like, it really hit me in the gut. I was like, damn, I'm going to be that person. And yeah. I think I killed it. Maybe not, but I think I did all right. Hey, they survived it. They survived it.
That's all that matters right there. You know, yeah, right. I remember going to one of those, you know, family readiness type things, before I deployed. And, I go with my wife and, you know, she's there to, you know, kind of figure out, this was my first deployment. It was, you know, we had just gotten married, not too long before that, you know, a year or so, a little year plus, before that. And we're sitting there, and some of the stuff they start talking about, like, you know, what happens when, you know, your loved one is killed, and like what to expect and stuff like that. And like, she just starts bawling because she's like, I wasn't expecting to be coming here having this conversation. Right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Somebody doesn't know any better. Yeah, definitely.
Right. Exactly. And they just like, they just dropped it on us. And I was like, they definitely could have done this a whole lot better. But you know, it is what it is. And we got through it. We came through on the other side all right with all that. But, you know, I know what it's like being deployed. You know, I don't know what it's like on the other side, but I know what it's like to be deployed, and it's not easy. And one of the things that my wife and I did was we made sure that we kept in communication with each other. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When I was deployed, and that's not the easiest thing to do, especially when you're on, you know, a remote base with, you know, communications are not very reliable out there. So what was it for you guys when you've dealt with deployments or maybe even just, you know, being away from home with military training or, you know, whatever it is that took you away? What is it for you guys that kind of, what's the secret sauce that keeps the family together?
Well, at the end of the day, brother, you gotta be like, look, this is us. We're divorce or whatever is not in our vocabulary.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You gotta take that out of your freaking vocabulary, first of all. And there's times on ships where you got decent internet, because you know, we're in 2021, you got decent internet, decent stuff like that, but stuff breaks.
Yeah.
And sometimes when you're remote in the middle of the ocean, it takes time to get parts to you. So you could be down a few weeks. In Jamie's case, when she was in Africa, yeah, she was on a land base. Mm-hmm. But first of all, you're in the Horn of Africa, where it's pretty primitive living. I mean,
right,
compared to us.
Well, it's better now than it was.
Yes.
And I'm sure now in 2021 versus 2018, I'm sure it's a lot better. But right. It was spotty internet.
She would just lose. We'd be talking. Like chatting, you know, like texting or messenger or Facebook messenger back and forth.
Yep.
And all of a sudden I just wouldn't hear for 8 hours because her stuff just went down for no reason.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But it went like, yeah, in the States it happens once every blue moon, but in there it happened once a week.
Yeah.
So I was exactly. Like, all right, I'm gonna go clean up. I'm gonna go do some house chores or something, you know,
sure.
And I'd hear from her like sporadically here and there. Hey, I'm good. It's just internet went down. Okay, cool. You know, and go back down again. But you got to put that in your mindset. You got to think rational. You got to be rational.
Right. You're like, not going to hear from your loved one like you could happen. In the States.
It could happen. I mean, you're in a foreign country where you're not in America anymore. That right. person is not in America. So, you know, the comforts of home is not always there.
Exactly. Yeah. What advice would you have for other military couples or even other dual military couples that, you know, you've been at this for a little while now. And so, you know, maybe you've figured out some secrets that help make things work a little bit smoother.
You know, I was talking to one of my coworkers the other day because we were driving through a tropical depression. He and I were driving back, in the government vehicle through a tropical depression. And it was on our side of, we live on in Louisiana, but there's like the border of Mississippi. So it was on mm-hmm. the Mississippi side. And, you know, he said, hey, you know, I feel like I need to concentrate on driving, but his wife was calling. And I said, it's because she can't see what we're going through. So my advice would be to say, hey, it may be sunny on my side, but I don't know what you're going through. So I'm not going to say, oh, let me continue calling me or call or whatever it may be, because I don't know what the storm is like on your side. And I don't know what you're driving through. I don't know what you drive on through, you know, but I don't know what you're going through. So that would be the advice that I would say is that from the perspective of the person, you have to be careful because it may be sunny and rainbows on your side and it may be a storm on their side. So be understanding about that.
Yeah. I think that's great advice. You know, just being open and kind of understanding of the other person and trying to put yourself in their shoes and see what they're going through is really a good way to go. Because if you just assume that you know everything that's going on with the other person, it's going to, you know, lead to some misunderstandings and, you know, inevitably arguments and all that kind of stuff. So I think that's a great way to put it. And I think that storm analogy is a great visual too, to think about, you know, where mm-hmm. the storm's on one side of the border, but it's not on the other side. So maybe the other person doesn't necessarily know what you're going through. So, so I do like that analogy. That's really good. Yes. So let's talk a little bit about, one of the things that we talked about last time when I was on your podcast was obviously the series that we had recorded, or, you know, one of the parts of the series that we recorded was surrounding the stigma with mental health, PTSD, and all that kind of stuff. Because a lot of times I think people think about PTSD especially as something that comes from being in combat, you know, whether mm-hmm. you've taken a life or you saw someone die or you were involved in an explosion, like an IED or something like that. But that's not always the case. And I think, Jamie, you alluded to it a little bit earlier, where a lot of it is, you know, when you were deployed, you're just sitting around waiting for that next thing to happen. And it wasn't necessarily that anything did happen. It was just that waiting, that keeping your head on a swivel and, you know, constantly, you know, being on alert, hypervigilant, you know, waiting for that next thing to happen. What was that like in terms of, you know, with you guys, with your deployments and everything? How much of a toll did that take on you? And you know, how have you dealt with that?
Okay, so I'll go ahead and answer this, because I really, and through this series that we did on To Hell with the Stigma, we learned a lot. But it is like, and I'll put it in another analogy, because I this is the way I explain things. But let's say that you decide that you're going to wake up every day at 5 a.m. and go to the gym. Okay. For the first week or so, it's rough, maybe the second week, but eventually your body gets used to waking up at 5 a.m. and going to the gym. So your body is accustomed to that. When you do come to a time where you can't sleep in, you still wake up at 5 a.m. because your body is accustomed to that. That's exactly what it's like waiting on something to happen. So for a year's time, you're like looking over your shoulder, looking at every bag that blows in the wind, any loose items, any like boom that you hear. You're hyper vigilant for an entire year. And then when you come back home, it's like, okay, I'm still hypervigilant because my body didn't go back to normal. My body is accustomed to waiting for that boom or waiting for that bag left unattended or whatever it might be. And so that's similar to what we experience when we do come back home. It's just, you don't just go back to normal because your body has transitioned to whatever that hypervigilance is.
Sure. Yeah. And it's a self-defense kind of mechanism too, to be on alert and be looking out for that thing that's going to go boom, or, you know, that could end up injuring you or somebody else. So, you know, it's a way that you protect yourself. So it's not like, I'm not trying to say that this type of stuff is a bad thing, that you are on alert and that you're aware of things, because if you're not, and you're in a dangerous place, you're going to get hurt. Like that's absolutely just bottom line.
Right. Definitely. You know? Yeah.
And so I think it's a good thing. It's just turning it off is the thing that we have trouble with sometimes. And, you know, it's good to be aware of your surroundings, even at home, because, you know, the bad things do happen at home too. Mm-hmm. But that hypervigilance where you're like constantly always aware and scanning your surroundings and constantly looking, I think it just kind of wears on you, and it gets to be a little bit, too much, for people. So, But to that point, you know, we had also talked about that process that the military goes through after you get back from a deployment, you know, where they send you to various mental health screenings and physical screenings and all that kind of stuff, all the medical screenings and things like that. And I think we all can agree that the process sucks.
You know, yeah.
Basically. Oh, definitely. Absolutely. Definitely.
I know when I got back, we talked about this earlier. I was sent about 800 miles away from home, you know. And at that time, all I wanted to do was be with my family. And that to me was just torture, you know, to be there. Yeah. And I think there has to be a better way to go through this. And I believe you guys said that you had a similar experience with all this too. Is that right?
Yeah, Jamie. I mean, so Jamie flew back. She left Djibouti, went to Germany for like a decompressed kind of thing, you know, where, you know, if you're going to raise hell, go ahead and do it here, you know, so that she did that. And then she flew to Virginia, Norfolk.
It was Norfolk.
Norfolk, yeah. Virginia. And they got all these, you know, go with the hearing test, sight test, whatever test they can give you, you know, they're going to freaking give you.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, you know, how you feeling? What's your mental state like? But, you know, you think she's got this dude asking his questions in between her and her family. She hadn't seen for almost a year.
Yeah.
Hmm.
What the hell you think she's going to say? I'm perfect.
Exactly.
You have symptoms of PTSD. I mean, no, I'm good. You know, I'm good. Right. I'm ready to go home. Hey, leave me alone. I'm ready to go home. So that's, in my opinion, it's kind of bullshit. You know, you got to. Why would you do that? Why would you say ask these hard questions before a sailor or soldier or airman or Marine gets to their family? That's something I think you should do. Maybe, hey, 2 months later, the nearest medical facility says, hey, we want to talk to you after you've been home for a little bit. And you get used to your family. You've been back with your family. Get to reunite with your family. Come back and be like, hey, let's talk mental health. How do you feel? You know, and then ask the questions you want to ask. But don't do that shit right before they go back to your family after not staying there for a year. Mm-hmm. What would you say? What would you say, Scott? I know what you would say.
For sure. I lied through my teeth and everything's great. You know, let's check the box. Let's get me out of here. I'm done. I want to go home.
Everything's roses, man. You know, yeah, I'm exactly. Ready to
Yeah, we had rainbows and unicorns. Everything was great. And, right. You know, let's move on and let's get to the next thing so I can get out of here. And I think that's a common theme with.
Oh,
with you know people, what, you Scott? Know? I've been in the Navy 25 freaking years, right? I just maybe 6 months ago I realized how important it is to talk about what issues you've had from what you've gone through. Mm-hmm. It took me 25 years to figure that out.
Yeah.
Can you imagine somebody that's been in Navy 6 years and you were a reserve, you were in the guard, right? So you were a weekend warrior until you had to deploy.
Right.
So you didn't know, you didn't have people mentoring you and telling you this stuff. So I mean, they should understand that, look, these guys don't know this stuff. Let's help them out.
Right. Exactly. And I think one of the things that really got me was when I had to go through all that screening, me and everyone in my unit, for the most part, there's a few people who came from other areas, but we're pretty much all from Connecticut.
Right.
And we all lived in Connecticut. Our families all pretty much lived in Connecticut. A few people were in, you know, New York, just over the border, you know, Massachusetts, maybe, you know, but for all intents and purposes, we're all pretty close to the Connecticut area. And they put me on a plane and sent me 800 miles away to Indiana to go do this screening and the medical screening and mental health and stuff like that. So there's no way for me to see my family and go, you know, be with them or anything like that. I had to be there. And same thing with all these other people. And so like, it just didn't make any sense to me. Like why couldn't we do this, you know, back home, you know, even if they wanted to do it right away when we first got back, fine, no problem, but let's do it back home. So we can at least go home, be with our family, you know, hang out with our kids, you know, that we missed a year of their life and stuff like that. Like it just doesn't make any sense that we have to go do that. So, you know, that's one of the things that I think, you know, we do have a problem with mental health in the military, especially coming off of deployments. And right. I think that's just something like it's a low hanging fruit. Like if we can better do this process better, I think that will help improve overall the mental health, you know, get people back into their families and back into a, you know, stable, area. And granted, not everybody has a family to go back to and stuff like that. But, you know, generally speaking, most people have somebody, you know, whether it's, you know, their parents or, you know, a girlfriend or boyfriend, you know, whatever it is, they have somebody that they can probably go back to, even friends, you know, and just be around.
I would say, Scott, that 90% of the people that go do either active duty, reserve, or they go deploy and deal with the shit, have to go back to somebody that's going to be negatively affected by what they've saw,
yeah,
what they've seen. I guarantee you. And it's so easy. Like you said, low hanging fruit. Let's just make this process a little better. That would make a lot of shit better. You know what I mean?
For sure.
You know what? We just learned that the VA is inundated with treating military members after the fact, because nobody wants to bring up the mental health issue while they're in. They're afraid of not being deployable or, you know, just getting reprimanded or having their work fall on their shipmate or their battle buddy's back. And so nobody deals with it while they're in. And then the expense of dealing with it afterwards is falling all on the VA.
Yeah.
And they could have dealt with it while they were in, but they just didn't know that it was, it's okay to deal with it while you're in.
I tell you what, though, I would have known it was okay to deal with it while you're in. I would think, well, they're going to kick you the hell out. And that's my livelihood. Sure.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think that was one of the things that went through my head too, was, you know, I don't want to deal with this. You know, I wanted to get back to my family, but I also didn't want to put my job at risk either. You know, I didn't want to get kicked out because I was, you know, maybe deemed that I had, you know, mental health problems or things like that. So I was like, you know what, screw it. I'll just deal with it on my own and I'll figure it out.
You know, recently Heath and I had this epiphany, because within our last weekend, I fell down and I hit my head on the concrete. I got a concussion. So I was very confused and just dizzy and that sort of thing. Well, a day afterwards, he was running and fell down and got...
No, it was like 3 days
later. Okay, 3 days later. He fell down and he cut his arm. So he had a bandage around his arm. Well, you know, nobody would ask him to lift a heavy box or anything like that. But me, having this concussion and being confused and dizzy, they were like, what's your deal? Why can't you work? You know, I don't understand. And so it's very similar to the stigma of mental health, because you can't see it. You don't physically have a bandage around your head or a bandage around your arm. And so people are like, well, why can't you be normal? What's your deal? You know?
Yeah, that makes sense.
And Scott, you mentioned it on the episode you did with us to Hell of a Stigma, that why can't, like, if you know somebody's going through chemo, you don't ask them to do shit. You know they're going through chemo. It should be just the same damn thing, right? Oh, you're going through chemo. Oh, you bumped the hell out of your head and you got a concussion. We're not going to ask you to do too much either. But it's not that way. It's still not that way. Even all the strides that the military has made, or you know, the world has made toward mental health, you know, concussions and everything else, it's still not there yet.
Yeah, it's definitely gotten better. I know even from when I was in, you know, I got out, you know, probably just about 10 years ago now. And, you know, it wasn't quite there. You know, the stigma was still there. And it, it wasn't as easy to just ask for help. You know, I think, you know, it definitely was better than it was, you know, 10 or 20 years even before that. But, you know, it still wasn't all that great. You know, it was a lot of the, you know, just suck it up, be a man, drive on and, you know, deal with it. Yeah, exactly. And you know, it's just how things were, but, you know, things are getting better. It's moving in the right direction. But I think conversations like this one is just important to have to raise awareness and make sure that people understand what's actually going on, you know, with the mental health and the things that are available to them too.
And that's what attracted me to your podcast, is because I read your, you know, we're here to give military, and you didn't specify which military, the tools to drive on. And that's why I like your podcast so much.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that I tell people who are guests on the show, who come on, or, you know, other people who talk about the show, is I don't care what branch you served in. I know we all, you know, joke on each other and, you know,
It's all,
you know,
good fun.
Rib on each other and stuff like that. It is all in good fun. You know, I want to help out the Navy as much as I do the Marines and the Army and the Air Force and the Coast Guard and hell, even the Space Force too, you know?
Yeah. Right. They're still a thing.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. So, you know, I'm here for the military period, for veterans, no matter what branch or what era you served in, you know, there, we're all going through stuff at one point or another. And I want to be there for all of them to help reduce that 22 a day down as low as we possibly can get it, you know?
Definitely.
Well, Heath and Jamie, it has been a pleasure speaking with you today. Could you let people know where to go to follow you online, like social media, and where to go to listen to your podcast?
All right. So our podcast is on every platform you can find a podcast. So, you know, you got your Apple, Google, Spotify, we're on everything, right? So definitely you can find us anywhere. Our Twitter is @E14podcast. Our Facebook is E-TAC-14podcast. Our Twitter is
Our Instagram is
@E14podcast. We're on every platform. We're easy to find. And, you know, we got some more stuff coming up. Charge of Leadership. We got that series coming up real soon. We got our first recording, hopefully tomorrow. And yeah, we're easy to find. So if you can't find us, it means you're not trying hard enough.
Google it.
And I'm going to make it even easier. I'm going to have links to all that in the show notes. So anyone checking this episode out, go check out the show notes. You can follow them online, social media. You can check out their podcast, wherever you're listening to this podcast, go search for E14 podcast in the podcast player of your choice. And you should be able to find them there. Check out all the episodes, the series that they did on mental health, to hell with the stigma was really great. Definitely check that one out and all the other episodes that they have going on too. So again, thank you both for joining me. I really enjoyed the conversation, really had a great time, and I look forward to listening to your episodes in the future and hearing more from you guys.
Thanks, brother. Thanks, it was a pleasure, man. Thank you for having us.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube @DriveOnPodcast.